Hello and welcome to 433, program hosted by yours truly, Gregory Gann, on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm very excited to be with you today, as we have a fairly ambitious program. I wanted to let the news play out as much as it could, because of the important messages it had to impart. But now that we're here together, I wanted to share some of my thoughts and reflections on two big events that happened this week in Vancouver. One was the Vancouver New Music Festival, the 40th anniversary retrospective that happened between October 16th and 19th. And another was another 40-year celebration, Kronos at 40. The Kronos Quartet performed as part of the Dalgar Memorial Lecture with Philip Glass at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts at UBC this Saturday, October 19th. Of course, it would have been impossible for me to attend both events, as one of them happened on the same night as the other. However, I did attend two performances with the Vancouver New Music 40th Anniversary Retrospective. One was on Wednesday, October 16th, featuring works for small ensemble and solos, and another on Thursday, October 17th, electronic, electroacoustic, and new media works being featured on that program. So I wanted to dedicate the first half of the show, first 20 minutes, to giving you some food for thought concerning those performances, and the rest of the program to commemorate the world premiere of Philip Glass's sixth string quartet by playing some of the old recordings of the Kronos Quartet performing Philip Glass. I also wanted to let you know what's playing alongside me right now. This is a CRES Media Arts Committee and CFRO Co-op Radio recording of Audio Art, volumes 7, 8, and 9. And I put on track number 4 by Heather McDermott, called Free/Space from 2009. So, Wednesday's program. Works for small ensemble and solos at the Vancouver New Music 40th Anniversary Retrospective. Featured Paul Dolden, Jacques Etu, Jacqueline Legat, Jocelyn Morlock, Michael O'Neill, James Rolfe, and featured Laurie Friedman, François Houle, Rachel Cayo, Iwasa, Mark McGregor, and Catriona Strang. The program was introduced by Giorgio Magninensi, a very charismatic... I'm at a loss for words to describe Giorgio. Charismatic figure who has been the artistic director of Vancouver New Music for some time. The first piece that was introduced was a piece by James Rolfe called Railway Street from 1991. And James described it as such. Railway Street on Vancouver's waterfront is where I first heard the music of King Crimson, its pulse spiraling, disorienting, slippery beyond fast or slow, an effect I later encountered in Japanese no music and certain pieces of Toru Takemitsu. Well, I tell you, this was a very intense performance, featuring quite a bit of the instruments that I described below, predominantly a bass clarinet. So, I don't know if I sensed so much the influence of King Crimson in Japanese traditional music, But Giorgio described this as a kind of floating feeling of energy out of interacting particles of electricity. I mean, I really thought of this piece as being urban, although sometimes quite repetitive. I mean, we hear the motion of trains, we hear the sounds of the city, and I was very impressed by the piece. The second piece being featured on the program was Sonate pour Piano, Opus 35, by Jacques Etu, performed by Rachel Iwasa on the piano. Giorgio again described this piece as having something familiar with a French sound. He described Jacques Etu's work as sonorities which are not sentimental, but which explore deep sound and resonance. I quite liked this solo piece for the piano. It was almost all very light, performed in kind of a legato form, although I found that the second movement dragged a little bit for me. Another piece was composed by Jacqueline Legat, and it was called Cold Trip from 2009. Written with poets Nancy Shaw and Catriona Strang, Cold Trip seeks to probe the relationship between music and poetry, as well as romantic and contemporary conceptions of the lyric, through adaptation and translation of Schubert's song cycle, Winter Race. There was a lot of poems to pick from, but Jacqueline picked, I think, a set of four poems. And they were premiered and commissioned by the Vancouver New Music. There was much movement in the pieces, which featured both spoken word, sang parts, as well as quite a bit of instrumental work as well. There was much movement, which in a way was a metaphor for an internal trip of our soul or of our life. After the break, we heard Resonance Number 1, In a Bed, from 1993 by the composer Paul Dolden. Paul was described as a very intense, charged, excessive composer, requiring extreme energy from the players. And the solo clarinet that graced us with that intensity was François Houle. This again was described as a kind of virtuosity of collaboration. Music was embodied by the musician. I thought it was quite carnal, carnivalesque, sometimes very intense. And then another extremely pleasant surprise was offered to us by Jocelyn Morlock. This was a piece whose excerpt was played on this program last week, called Icarus Landing, from the year 2000. And Icarus Landing, described by the composer, was a kind of metaphor for realizing our own mortality. Of course, Icarus lands with a thump because he is no longer alive. So the piece starts as being quite transparent and then moves to a more intense sound. Thickness and density become more chaotic until we reach that climactic and very tortured but satisfying end. The last piece of the program, and I am once again describing works for small ensemble and solos performed last Wednesday, October 16th, at the Orpheum Annex as part of the Vancouver New Music Festival 40th Anniversary Retrospective, was by Michael O'Neill, and it was called Stabimobilism. Stabimobilism featured Michael O'Neill on bagpipes, and well, Lori Friedman on bass clarinet. Now, who would have thought that music was being composed for bagpipes, modern bagpipes? And yet this repetitive melody, which sometimes was created in very intense unison and sometimes in counterpoint or dissonant harmony, offered us so much texture of sound, such constant, uninterrupted experience, that it sometimes even pulled us away, but it never pulled itself apart. Once we got used to the sound, that's where the experiment really began. So I invite any of the listeners to, of course, check out the Vancouver New Music website to check out the more descriptive parts of the program. And meanwhile, I wanted to talk a little bit about the electronic, electroacoustic, and new media works that were heard on Thursday, October 17th. The composers featured on the program were Jackson Two Bears, Magali Babin, Tim Hecker, and Robert Normando, as well as Hildegard Westerkamp. What were my impressions? Well, as far as new music of Vancouver is concerned, there's really such an eclectic mix of very, very talented composers and performers of electroacoustic music. In fact, electronic music has a pretty rich tradition in Vancouver, which sometimes binds classic electronic with computer music, with international compositions and Canadian compositions. The first piece by Babin was a fairly significant exploration of sound, incorporating almost a kind of classical tradition of electronica and computer-generated tones, and the sampled soundscapes. Magali Babin calls her piece The Walk of the Nebulophone and the Noisificator. In the program, she describes this piece. Where am I? What is this place? Where do my steps go to follow the unstable circuits and meet the atmospheric variations of nature? A walk in an analog dream. Indeed, it was analog, and the croaking and then the manipulation of sound makes us aware of the creation of sound itself. The buzzing of bees, the rain, the storm. It gives us a kind of sensation of, I felt almost like the kind of Truman Show of sound, in that we're completely surrounded by it. Magali is somewhere between a sample and Foley artist, but we don't need to make that kind of categorization. She does once again arrive at an entirely satisfying conclusion, and where I think the thesis of the composition is that wherever we are, we must be at peace with our place. Another person featured on the program was Robert Normando, a Quebec composer, and his piece was called Hamlet Machine with Actors from 2003. This was a staged play that was adapted to a kind of electronic, electroacoustic program, again, with the Vancouver New Music, and it was extremely intense. It premiered about 10 years ago, and I think shook a lot of the people in the audience. It was intense, cathartic, brings the audience into the space. It was a piece of prepared music that featured trains, demonic, manic laughter, and a lot of noise. Which is not to say that it wasn't beautiful, but it was all-encompassing for sure. Jackson Two Bears performed the piece Iron Tomahawks from 2006 to 2013, really. And it is an ongoing series of live cinema scratch video artworks by Kanyenke Haka, Mohawk artist Jackson Two Bears. It premiered in 2006 again, but the work seems like it rejuvenates with every performance. Jackson Two Bears is as much rock DJ as sample artist, but the message of the piece was probably one of the more important ones of the program. Through a kind of collage of the video and the musical samples, Jackson Two Bears made us very well aware of the indigenous roots to our place, which is Canada. And this was through a very kind of logical manipulation of images and sounds by focusing on such events as standoff at Caledonia, the Olympic Games, the Idle No More in Vancouver, the Idle No More movement. All of these make a very convincing political message, and I think this has got to be one of the more significant performances of the piece. I thought that certainly high schools all over this province would benefit from inviting Jackson Two Bears to perform there. Although, I don't know if he would agree. Hildegard Westerkamp, Für Dich, For You, a piece from 2005 for 8 digital soundtracks. Featured the poetry by Rainer Maria Rilke, with an English translation by Norbert Rubsat. This was probably the most relaxing piece of the program. Hildegard is one of the founding members of the World Soundscape, kind of an acoustic ecology society. And I think the common theme of the program itself was a kind of reminder of what we value as place. Is it love? Is it struggle? Is it complexity? And this piece was a love story that was an adaptation of the poem that was played on loop and featured many different voices from many different sides. Some of the lines that I really, really liked from this piece was, "How shall I hold your soul?" And again, the love motif, but from two strings draws a single, upon which instrument are we two strung, and pray, who is the fiddler who holds us in his hand? Again, Hildegard brings the world to us. The soundscape is in a small room with an audience of about 200 people. These are electroacoustic but very deep sounds. They're so convincing because they are so familiar to us. They are the sounds of birds, of church bells, of the sea. And it is really incredibly convincing to experience this as if you're actually there. The last and perhaps the most popular composer on the program of electronic and electroacoustic and new media works program with the Vancouver New Music 40th year anniversary was Tim Hecker. He performed a kind of adapted work called Virgins, which dates a few years back. And I think he also brought a lot of folks to the venue, perhaps the more youthful audience than usually go to experimental European avant-garde concerts, say. And so the piece was, this is what I call it. I call it the wall of sound minimalism. It is pulsating, it is repetitive, it basically is an analog track that draws together some of our favorite technologies, you know, pedals, mixers, and amplifies them through positive feedback until we get a sense of being completely inundated with sound. A lot of people, I think, really were extremely impressed with this. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm the one to be a little bit more critical about it, because it was so reminiscent of so many things that I've heard before. This could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what your perspective on uniqueness and originality in music is. For me, it was, I mean, very reminiscent of early experiments in ambient music, even into some respect with Steve Roach's Dreamtime Return, although it was extremely intense compared to Roach's smooth and very easily interpretable melodies. But this wall of sound minimalism, I would suggest for you to create an impression of your own. And you can go to even a YouTube clip of Virgins and find out this particular composition. I wanted to change directions a little bit and talk about a fairly significant event that happened in Vancouver, featuring the Kronos Quartet performing the world premiere of Philip Glass's Sixth String Quartet. Philip Glass gave a lecture as part of the Dalgar Memorial lecture at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts, and then the Kronos Quartet performed to a packed, sold-out show at the Chan Center. And perhaps I could cue a little music to introduce both the Kronos Quartet and my own interpretation of the program. This is Kronos Quartet performing a work of Philip Glass called Company. It's about 8 minutes long, and that's about as much time as I would like to talk about the program. So, what did Philip Glass reveal in his conversation with Eleanor Wachtel from the CBC? Well, he revealed that, of course, he has collaborated with the Kronos Quartet for quite a number of years, and that they cultivated the same audience. They were not part of any kind of university environment, and so did not have the same kind of financial backing. Perhaps the first collaboration was Mishima, which was has been featured on this program before. For this particular performance, which was a world premiere, Philip Glass dedicated it, the Sixth String Quartet, to Kronos at 40. Again, the involvement with the quartet has been extensive, and because the Kronos Quartet is not a kind of top-down organization, there has been many collaborations throughout both the creative output of Philip Glass's career, which has been quite incredible, and the Kronos Quartet's long tradition of performing his works. Philip Glass writes very personally, writes a part for each person that he knows. And a lot of this energy also means that the textural density of his work must be amplified by the dynamics of the performers. However, when probed how many times he has heard this piece performed, he said that the first time was the morning of the concert itself. It was quite a difficult listen, and they restructured some parts in the harmony of the score. Writing for string quartet for Philip Glass is an essential part of a composer's personality. His father was involved in chamber music, and he considers it the most intimate expression of a composer's work. Mishima, for example, follows the story of a Japanese writer. And during black and white vignettes or parts of the film, he really tries to describe the composer's or the writer's life. This kind of writing allows a maximum density, and it allows clarity at the same time. He has described this particular string quartet as being very labor-intensive. He put a lot of work into it. When asked whether there was a lot of intimacy in that work, he says, "I'm the last person to know what I sound like." And perhaps that is for critics to decide. So perhaps I wanted to move to the performance by Kronos Quartet itself. The Kronos Quartet is San Francisco's quartet, which features in its current lineup David Harrington on violin, John Sherba on violin, Hank Dutt on viola, and Sunny Yang on cello. The program featured quite an eclectic mix that the Kronos Quartet is familiar for. For example, the opener of the program was John Oswald's Spectre. This was a piece from 1990, and Canadian composer John Oswald is well known for his development of audio quoting or plunderphonic techniques, and part of those techniques may be called glitch art. Plunderphonics was quite a controversial piece that landed him in a lot of hot water with recording companies. In fact, to such an extent that he's not able to sell it, and he maybe even had to destroy the master tape of Plunderphonics. But in this instance, as soon as the quartet came out, they had the audience's full attention. This was as much a performance of sound as a kind of sound performance. It also featured a recorded soundtrack and made it seem as if the quartet was playing imaginary sounds. Gishi Wiley was the second composer featured on the program, with a piece called Last Kind Words. This was a piece that was recorded in 1930, and very little is known about this performer, except in a kind of cultish imaginary of what we consider a blues legend. To plucked accompaniment, David Harrington played the violin as a fiddle, making beautiful, ornamented, lyrical passages sing to the audience. Number three on the program was a piece by Alter Yechiel Carniol called Sim Shalom from 1913. This was a cantor who was born in Poland and sang in Hungary, and the piece was arranged by Judith Bergson. This really did sound like a song of a cantor. And cello was given the voice, and strings, the other strings were meant to accompany it. It was expressive, lyrical, ornamented, and this was the only piece of the program that really highlighted the cello's virtuosity. Canadian Premiere by Nicole Lisée, a Montreal-based composer, was quite well performed. Violin slides, plucked cello strings, glissandos. There were pre-recorded synth passages and added cymbals and taps of the bow on guitars. It was very fast-paced and had a lot of dramatic changes of dynamics and tone. Syncopated with a pre-recorded vocal part, and it was almost meditative and trance-like in certain parts, punctuated by clapping and other techniques. Sometimes it took on the mood of a capricious child, as if somebody was wailing in the background. And at other times, the synthesizers that amplified the emotional tone of the piece were reminiscent of a kind of monkish chant and accompanied by fast-paced, arpeggiated passages. The last piece to be performed in the first half was Philip Glass's world premiere of the String Quartet No. 6. Philip Glass himself writes, "String Quartet No. 6 is the most recent result of a long and ripening friendship between myself and the Kronos Quartet. Composing for String Quartet has been part of my life from my earliest years, even as a student composer at the Juilliard School. The Kronos Quartet had performed and recorded all the earlier numbered quartets before they commissioned String Quartet No. 5 in 1991. The next work composed for them was the soundtrack of the 1931 film Dracula, directed by Todd Browning." So you see that there is a kind of ominous, almost frightening tone to the number six, much like composers, at least in the early days, were very wary of writing Symphony No. 9. The first movement of the String Quartet was quite challenging. Sometimes it had the kind of satisfying minimalist arpeggios that were very familiar to us from other string quartets written by Philip Glass. And yet it was very complex. It had a complex tonality. And did not have the kind of quintessential tonal simplicity that we expect from a Philip Glass work. Some people describe Philip Glass as being, his version of minimalism as having a relaxing effect. I disagree, but I would not think that many people in that audience felt very relaxed. To me personally, and perhaps this was the effect of the acoustics of the Chan Center, which I was not extremely impressed by, or the fact that the Kronos Quartet only performed the piece live that same afternoon for Philip Glass and made several revisions in the course of the day, I felt that the piece was underperformed, and I think it was a little bit of a letdown for me in terms of the effect that a kind of quintessential string quartet composed by Philip Glass and performed by the preeminent Kronos Quartet, has on the audience. The impact wasn't there for me. And maybe I was really hungry or grumpy or whatever else, but you can feel free to disagree. So I do hope that the quartet, along with Philip Glass, do refine that composition, and I do hope that we get to hear it at some point again sometime soon. However, I was extremely impressed with the second part of the program. The second part of the program only featured three songs, two fairly short ones, one by Evik Taksim. Oh, sorry, it was called Evik Taksim by Tamburi Semil Bey. And Tamburi Semil Bey is widely regarded as the most renowned composer of instrumental art music from the late period of the Ottoman Empire. I have to say that Tamburi Semil Bey is not a name familiar to me. However, when I heard this piece performed and featuring the viola, strings provided a kind of drone. I thought it was so incredibly well suited to the quartet. It was both complex and extremely satisfying to the audience. And I do hope that anyone interested in the future works of the Kronos Quartet keeps their eyes peeled for Tamburi Semil Bey. The second last piece was called was a traditional lullaby arranged by Jakub Garchik. And it was the music of southern Iran. It had alternating voices, plucked cello part. It was very difficult to perform because of the shifts of tonality that we usually associate with Middle Eastern music. It was very evocative, though. It was like a journey, full of emotion, and almost a kind of visceral sensation of travel along with the singer, or in this case, the voices of the strings of the quartet. The last composition, and the longest one of the second half of the program, was incredibly impressive. It was Alexandra Vrybalov's Hold Me, Neighbor, in This Storm. Alexandra Vrybalov was a native of the former Yugoslavia, and she left Serbia in 1995 and continued her education in the United States. Vrybalov's works had been performed by the Kronos Quartet and premiered all over the world. This was an extremely complex piece featuring both pre-recorded sounds and instruments that would not be considered traditional to the string quartet. The second violin, for example, was on drums and sometimes punctuated the sounds of the drums with loud shouts. The piece itself was driving, rhythmic, dissonant. The quartet stomped on the ground in tune with pre-recorded chants. Then there were very beautiful lyrical passages, almost like a calm after a storm, that were full of anguish yet relief. Again, we feel and we hear the pre-recorded church bells. We hear children playing, a clock ticking. Kronos is almost in the background, but at the same time, we experience them foregrounded through both the lighting displays at the chant center and, of course, their place on stage. The mid part of the composition was playful, dance-like, almost like a traditional Jewish song. And then it picked up tempo, almost like a storm was gathering. And of course, the composition's name was Hold Me Neighbor in This Storm. The finale was punctuated by notes in unison, as if the quartet was having a fight with itself. After another slow movement, there were syncopated sections with viola on melody and plucking violins and drums. A wonderful thing that I can say about the Kronos Quartet is that they do reward their audiences. And in this case, they rewarded their audience with not one or two, but three encores. And their encores were as eclectic as the program itself. The first one was brought, was a composition by Marika Papagika called Smira Echo. She was a Greek composer that came, or at least was the piece which was brought to us in 1916. And in this piece I heard many kind of lyrical trade-offs with a viola performing in pizzicato. It's very beautiful, very traditional melody, but of course in the hands of Kronos Quartet it would be hard to call anything necessarily traditional. The second encore featured Colombian music, and it really transported us to Bogota in Colombia. And the third quartet was the one and only, the one that put Kronos on the map, and it was Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. There you go, Purple Haze, by none other than the Kronos Quartet. So some of the music that you heard on the program today was a Heather McDermott piece called Free Space from 2009, Emma Hendrix, Promeal, And then in describing the Kronos at 40, performing at the Chan Center last Saturday, I played to you Philip Glass Company, Conlon Nonkara, a string quartet, and finally Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze. And this, the last set of three compositions, are from a vinyl from 1986 of Kronos Quartet music. I guess we should finish off the program with some of the music that has become wildly popular. Again, I'm going to play a string quartet performed by Kronos Quartet, string quartet number 5 by Philip Glass, to commemorate the world premiere of string quartet number 6. I know that this program has been a lot of talking, and in fact, I wish that you would join me again next week for a special interview with Colin McDonald and the Pocket Orchestra. We're going to speak with Colin about his performance of the Colin McDonald Pocket Orchestra, Fantasia, music by McDonald, Muirhead, Elitzer, Martland, Nyman, on Friday, November 1st at 8 p.m. at the Orpheum Annex. Tickets are still available, and I hope that you join me again next Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. To hear some of Colin's favorite music, to chat about the performance, and to talk about Colin McDonald Pocket Orchestra. Meanwhile, I hope you enjoyed the program. This has been 433 with your host, Gregory Gann. 433 looks at new music, especially through my very selective lens. And it tries to, well, basically talk about new music in a very friendly and accessible manner, which is what I hope that I did today with you. In describing both the Vancouver New Music Festival and Kronos at 40 performing at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts. Meanwhile, I wanted to thank you for listening, and I hope you will join me again next week. Without further ado, string quartets performed by Kronos Quartet, string quartet number 5 by Philip Glass. Thank you. Thank you for listening. This has been 433 with your host, Gregory Gann. Please stay tuned for my good friend Gak and the Exploding Head Movies coming up next. Gak, I saw at the Philip Glass concert last Saturday. Please ask him about it. Thank you for listening. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
$1 billion on the ground, all stretched out and uncurled, would extend about four times around the circumference of the world.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the West End at
212 Productions Limited, The Baker and the Chef, Bang on T-shirts, Bistrude Records, Dream Apparel and Articles for People, Dunleavy Snack Bar, The Fall Tattoo, Fortune Sound Club, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematic, Perch, Project Space, Scratch Records, Vinyl Records, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or online at citr.ca.
Why did you eat the whole thing?
Hi.
You snuck in my room and got him and shut the door. Because I told you not to eat anymore. Why'd you eat so many?
I love M&M's.
I know you love M&M's, but now you're going to have a tummy ache.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
When I have a rumbly in my tummy, the only thing that makes me feel better is listening to CITR 101.9 FM.